As many of you know, I was diagnosed with ADHD in my early 30s. It was a major learning process for me and still is. On today's episode, Sean comes on to share his experience having ADHD and learning to manage his finances. Sean's been married for 23 years, has two kids ages 21 and 15, and he works as a computer programmer. Today, we talk about his struggles and successes with learning to budget towards the way that his brain is uniquely wired. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles will show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. You guys know I'm all about finding ways to minimize both clutter and overspending. If you're looking to reduce your clothes spending while still having new styles to try, this is for you. I have a couple events coming up that I'd love to have new pieces for. With the clothes I got from Armoire, I can have multiple high-end options for the price of one outfit. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/debtfreemom. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/debtfreemom to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. All right. Today on the podcast, I have Sean, who is here to talk about budgeting with ADHD. So Sean, welcome to the Debt Free Mom podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So before we jump into some of the troubleshooting and problem solving to get you into a spot where budgeting feels a little bit more motivating or exciting or something that's manageable in your life, can you tell me a few of the things that you've maybe tried in the past? What are some methods or ways of budgeting that you've had the best intentions and written down that seem to fall apart along the way?
So the things that I usually end up doing is I actually keep a notepad here on my desk where I work because I work from home. I will go through usually around the first of the month and around the 15th of the month because I get paid twice a month. And I actually go through all of my accounts because I've actually got several where I split everything up to make it easier to figure out where I'm paying things out of. And I will go through to catalog, okay, these are all of the bills that I'm paying. This is how much are being paid, when. And that way, hopefully, I'm able to stay on top of scheduling everything to be paid because so many places don't like advanced scheduling. So I will go through and I'll write down that catalog of things to pay. The struggle that I end up having is that the latter half of the month, bills that have to be paid, a lot of times I'll actually forget to go back into dealing with those because I will be working. A lot of things are coming up. I have several appointments for various things for myself, for the rest of my family. And it just, the notepad just sits there collecting dust by the end of the month. And then comes the first of the month and I'm sitting here going, oh wait, I need to get this written back out again so that I know where everything's going. And then I get into one of the utility bills and I'm sitting there going, well, why is this one that only goes up by like $60 a month at 300? And then I find out that I've missed paying the gas bill for 3 months, which is a very big struggle. And then one of the other issues that I have is come the end of the workday, if it's been a particularly busy day or just frustrating, sitting there trying to figure out what to make for dinner, as a prime example, my wife and I have gone through and we've made this big menu and everything. This is what we're going to be making on what day and everything else. And then comes the day and just, I really don't feel like making that tonight. Mm-hmm. And so now, even though we've spent the money to make that meal, we're going to push that meal off and instead we're going to go and get takeout. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't planned in the budget. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that ends up just being another hit. And that takes away from anything that we're planning on saving or, using for something else. Mm-hmm. Those are usually the two big hindrances that we have. And then anything that I missed in the catalog when I was going through, just, oh, I didn't see that, crap, and now that's $85 that I missed.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to it that are not all set. Like, it's not an even pattern all the time, so it's hard to manage. So for people listening, you and I chatted about this in the green room, so to speak, before we started. But for people listening, Can you tell us a little bit about your ADHD and how that impacts you? It impacts everyone who has it differently. So what are some of the more primary things that you struggle with inside of that that are maybe contributing to the budgeting struggles that you're describing?
So the biggest parts with the ADHD is really the time blindness, and in that if I'm not literally looking at the scheduling of something all the time, it's very easy to forget that I've got that coming up. And a very common piece of advice with that is, well, if you put it into your calendar and you have notifications popping up saying, hey, you've got this coming up, you've got this coming up. The issue with that is if you get 300 notifications a day, they all just become white noise in the background. Mm-hmm. You just swipe them away. It's like, oh, hey, look, I've got another thing flashing on my screen. You don't even read them anymore. And that's one of the really big ones. And then there's object permanence is the other really big one that really exists. And that just, if you don't constantly think about it, you don't constantly look at it, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And that commonly happens right after you put it down. You put it down and it no longer exists for you until mm-hmm. somebody else tells you, by the way, that's where you put it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you remember and say, wow, hey, I was wondering why that went in the fridge. And then, of course, the third thing is just the pleasure center of the brain just does not make enough of the hormones that we as people typically need.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look for external stimuli for that. And whenever we just have a rough day or rough week, which welcome to the world we're in, that's mm-hmm. pretty much everyone everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, we look for any shortcut that we can use to really try and stimulate that or even just meet a bare minimum to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I had said about the, you know, long day at work,
mm-hmm.
sometimes just the thought of making dinner is just like, wow, that's just way too much work.
Yeah.
We'll shortcut that to something. I'm hungry right now.
Mm-hmm.
Why do all the work? I can just go and grab the quick fix. You know, step out to a fast food joint or even just a microwave dinner.
So I have very similar time blindness and the object permanence of out of sight, out of mind are my biggest struggles for sure. So when we think about budgeting too, and like you're kind of bringing up the budgeting and the making dinner piece, one of the things that is so hard about both of those for someone with ADHD is that it's one giant Mount Everest of a task that has a million different tasks inside of it. And then it requires planning. It requires forethought mm-hmm. of like, not only is there a depth to the list of tasks, but they also have to happen over time. And those two things, the depth and the width of the task, is just sometimes too overwhelming to even attempt for anyone, but I think especially for people who already have that executive dysfunction. Because we can't pace ourselves. We have a big problem with pacing ourselves over time to say, okay, if the large project requires these 10 things and they have to happen in the next 10 days, if I do one of them a day, then I get there. I understand that theoretically. I don't do that at all. I don't like all 10 of them are going to happen on day 10 or they're not going to happen at all. Those are the only two options.
There's also day one. Day yeah. one is also available.
Yes.
Day three just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I've got other things to do. It's day one when you make the list. It's day 10 when it's due, or it wasn't that important.
Or like midnight of day 9. Like that's like when we're like, oh, tomorrow's day 10. We're going to cram.
Midnight day 9 is part of day 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, day 11 works.
Day 11 does work if you get that professor extension, right? I'm thinking of mm-hmm. college was a big, I did not receive my diagnosis until after college, but retroactively thinking back to college, I'm like, oh my goodness, I could have used the knowledge that this was why I was doing things the way I was doing them. And now I will say, by the time I got to college, while I didn't have the terminology around it, I had accepted, I do my best work last minute. I'm not even going to try. I no longer felt the uphill battle of like, all of my peers are working on it and it's due a month from now. I should work on it. I was just like, nope, I know that in the last 48 hours, I'll get the whole thing done.
So why stress?
Right.
Now I'll just make that plan. I'll know that 48 hours before it's due is when I'm going to work on it. I might get the stuff together to do that work before then.
Yeah.
But actually doing it.
Yeah, it's very, very relatable. So I think what happens with the, especially with the budgeting piece, is that we try to do that. Like when we come to payday or a due date or the end of the month is when we feel that due date, so to speak. And so that's when we're then triggered to go look at it, because we're like, oh, yeah, that needs to, you know, either, like you said, a lot of the bills are due then, or when we get a new paycheck, we have that.
Payroll's in.
Yep. We have that reinvigoration of like, now it's fun because there's a lot of stuff in my checking account. And so I can come up with different things that we want to do. And then as soon as it starts to feel like the checking account balance is dropping really fast and we're also really far from getting our next paycheck, then all of the excitement wears off and we just don't touch it until the next payday.
Which is all part of why we actually have the several different accounts set up. We actually have one that's set up for our grocery budget. So it's like, okay, well, that money is set aside for groceries. It completely separate. So we know that we don't have to worry about how we're going to afford to eat this pay period, because that money's already there and set aside. We're good. And then we've got another one that's set aside for our copays for our medical bills when those come in, when we have to go and do things. So it's like, okay, well, we've got that covered. So if we have to go and do a thing, we're all set. And then I have a particular check that comes in at the start of the month that goes into one account, and that covers some loans that I have and our mortgage. And so we're going to have a roof over our head guaranteed no matter what. So I don't have to really sweat about that. It's the utilities that we actually really have to worry about, because that one's coming out of the main bulk of my payroll check that comes in twice a month. And that one's the one, okay, payroll has hit. Now I go through all the bills and I make sure that everything's going to be covered. And so once I know everything's covered, now I need to know how much I've got left for any other incidentals that come up. And that's where the juggle comes in. And then where things like, in particular, the one that really gets on my nerves is our T-Mobile bill. Because that one is due on the 16th. My payday is on the 15th. It usually hits my account at the end of the 14th. And T-Mobile auto pays in the morning of the 14th. And so it says, oh, we couldn't draw it because you didn't have sufficient funds. So it's like, okay, you couldn't draw it at the beginning of the 14th. So I have to pay it at the end of the 14th. And actually this past time, I noticed on the 15th it hadn't paid. So I went ahead and paid it. And then at the end of the 15th, they auto paid it as well. So it's like, oh my God. So now I've paid $520 on a $260 bill.
Just as a practical matter, do they allow you to change your due date? Like, could you change it to like the 20th so that you knew that for sure your paycheck would be there?
To the best of my knowledge, I haven't been able to find anywhere that they would allow it.
Okay.
It's just been set to the 16th for ages.
Based on when you signed up, probably. Because that was, let's see, I'm going to Google while we're on. Account holders can request a due date change once per account lifetime. So you have to actually contact them.
I probably already changed it.
Probably already changed it. Yeah.
Ages ago.
So one thing I'm thinking of is if you're setting a budget up by pay period, trying to figure out what you're going to cover with your first paycheck and what you're going to cover with your 15th paycheck, I personally would start budgeting as if the T-Mobile bill is paid out of the paycheck on the first. Because what happens then, if you budget as if this needs to be covered out of my paycheck that I'm paid the first of the month, either it will actually need to be paid with using that paycheck because your 15th of the month paycheck hasn't arrived yet, or it won't actually auto withdraw until the 15th or the 16th, but you'll be fine either way because the money will still be there either way. Mm. So that's a small tweak in a larger conversation of setting up a budget. But that would be one thing that I would do. I know for myself, my cell phone bill is very consistent, but my utilities are not. So like what the due date is, and I do have them on auto pay, but they have a very weird, like if the due date is on a Saturday, they still pull it out on Saturday. But if it's on Sunday, they pull it out on Friday. Like, I don't know. So depending on the day of the date of the month that bill is owed, it could be anywhere from like the 4th to the 7th, basically, that bill would be. So I always put it into my budget as if it's on the 4th. So whatever the earliest possible date that I could expect to pay that bill is the day that I budget it as if that's the due date, because it's a lot easier to end up having a bill get paid out a couple days later than I thought, rather than a couple days earlier than I thought. Earlier than I thought can be problematic, as you're describing. Yeah. So again, that's kind of a in the weeds point to a larger piece. So is your 1st and 15th paychecks, those are the primary ones for your household? You said there's a once a month check, there's a 1st and 15th. Are there any other pay schedules that you're having to monitor?
So no, right now it's just those two paychecks. It's from work, and it's actually the 15th, and it's the last of the month.
Okay.
And then there's the one that I get from the VA on the 1st. And then the actual date that they come in is a few days in advance of those scheduled dates.
So what I would recommend, and I'm sure you've tried it before, but if I was building your budget, I would build it on that 1st and 15th. And I would go off of what you know to be the date that the money is actually available in your checking account. So for example, like you said, if it's the 15th and the last date of the month, but that check is always available to you on the 14th, for example, I would actually build the budget on the 14th. So what I would try to do is, as much as possible, make what's going to happen in your bank account match what your budget says. So not what the payroll date is, not what the paper due date is of your bill, but what actually is going to happen in your checking account be the thing that is recorded in your budget. Because if we can make budget and bank account match as much as possible, then it's just one less thing that we have to hold in your head. Because if, for example, if we write down that the bill is due on the 10th, but we know it's always withdrawn on the 7th, if we try to budget as if it's on the 10th, then we have to actively remember that it's actually going to come out on the 7th, as opposed to just budgeting as the bill is on the 7th. It will just minimize how many, like, oh, I know that I wrote down 10th, but it's actually 7th. And so then that just adds to a list of details that we have to be conscious of, which is hard to do.
And particularly when we have a difficult time remembering that bill exists in the first place.
Yep. And that we're so convinced that we already paid it when we didn't. And yeah, it gets complicated fast. And so I think that's honestly just the name of the game. That's why I figured out this budget system that worked for me, was that I needed to minimize how many things I had to think of in my head, because I had tried doing that for a while. And I was so overly confident that I would be able to hold it in my head. And then these little things would happen where I'm like, why is that coming out? Why, you know, and being confused about it, and suddenly having the awareness of, you can't hold this in your head as much as you think that you can. Get it out on paper. I think that's why pay period budgeting in particular was so successful for me, in a way that monthly budgeting wasn't, was because I had to narrow the scope of what I was looking at and paying attention to, so that I only, at the time, for the first 6 years that I budgeted, it was every other Friday. So I was only ever really tracking 2 weeks at a time. So when we talk about that dopamine idea of, we're really excited on payday and we're really not excited in the middle of the month, I think that was why the twice a week budget really made a difference for me, was because I was either in the first week, which was exciting, and I had all this money and I got to move it around to all these different things. And another thing that I retroactively now realize is so funny is, my husband and I each do personal spending cash, and he just socks his away for like months and months at a time. And mine was like gone within 24 hours every time. It was just like, as soon as that money was available to me, I spent it. And the concept of holding on to it for something later was so foreign.
Mine is usually whenever I have a plan of, okay, I need to set aside some money because I want to buy a thing, that ends up being that anytime that my wife and I arrange to set aside money for us to be able to spend for ourselves, I've literally, like, if we're going to do a monthly stipend, for lack of a better term, yeah, mine's spent usually 6 months out. So yeah, it's like, okay, we're going to do $20 a month. All right, so I've now spent $120, and
next January I'll be back to zero.
prime example is I'm really into playing tabletop RPGs. Mm-hmm. So the most commonly known one is Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. It's not the one that I play because I boycott the manufacturer of that particular game, but the one of their competitors, they have an adventure out that, to purchase the stuff for it is going to cost me $120. And so I've been sitting here now for the last 4 months trying to figure out where I'm going to come up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, luckily, actually, I should say for me, I have been able to get my priorities straight in that I've been able to prevent myself from triggering the reflex purchase that mm-hmm. is a very big thing for a lot of people with ADHD going, oh, hey, I've got $120 mm-hmm. in the account. Mm-hmm. I've got $120 available on my credit card. I can go ahead and get that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Except I'm trying to get my credit score up.
Mm-hmm.
A good way to do that is to bring down my balances on my credit card. I might have $120 free on my credit card, but that's going to bring the balance back up, mm-hmm. tanking my score. That's not going to work for me.
And that what you're describing is so true is that, like, it's not that we don't know those things, right? Like, it's not like, oh, well, you don't understand how it works or whatever. It's like, no, we understand. Like, we get it. But there's just this gap between what we understand and then what we decide to do. And that's that executive function motivation that is just, it's like a wild thing that we're trying to rein in and we just can't.
And luckily, Capital One has a lot of tools that say that point you at your credit score stuff. So it's really easy to sit there and go, oh, wait, if I do that, that's the impact on the score. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I want.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, but I know a lot of people that do have ADHD. It, even with those tools in place and mm-hmm. even with that knowledge, it can still be a struggle. And
yeah.
I mean, I am sympathetic towards them. It's taken a lot of work to get to being mm-hmm. able to finally say, hey, wait. I mean, when I got out of the service, I got a severance check from them. And one of the first things I did was drop $6,000 on computer parts mm-hmm. and I was supposed to be saving the severance check for a down payment on a house, but we hadn't picked out the house that we were going to put the down payment on, and I wanted to build these two computers mm-hmm. and so I built the two computers instead. And this was like 15 years ago mm-hmm. and I hadn't done the work yet, so that's the struggle.
So like with the pay period idea, I think that's why I found success with it, is that I was able to narrow the window of time. And even with my time blindness, I can understand or conceptualize 2 weeks. You know, like it was within my window of, like, that felt immediate to me in terms of, you know, groceries or whatever it was. If I tried to do a full month, the end of the month, if it's the first of the month, the 30th of the month, felt like 5 years away. It like felt inconsequential. It was like, oh, what I do right now is not going to have any impact on the 30th of the month. Well, lo and behold, month after month after month, what I did on the first of the month had a giant impact on what happened on the 30th of the month. It's just that pacing ourselves. And that, I think that is what happens a lot of times, is we see the money. So we have a misplaced value on the balance in our checking account, where we think that is guiding our decision making, that if there's money there, I can spend, and if there's not, then I can't. But what's actually happening, and again, this plays into the object permanence, is what is actually at play is that the money that's sitting in that checking account is already spoken for. It hasn't exited for those bills yet, right? Like the T-Mobile, mm-hmm. the auto pay, the utilities. It hasn't exited for that yet, but it is already spoken for, as in it needs to be used for those things. But when we log into our bank account and look at our bank account balance, that's not what we see. That's not what is in front of us. And so all we see is the checking account has $2,500 in it. So I can go buy something for $200 and it's going to have, quote, no impact on my finances. When if we instead set up a list of, this is my income and these are all the things that I need to pay with that check, what is left, I would then, if I was looking at that number with as much weight or as much value as I was looking at my checking account balance, I would realize very quickly, I actually can't spend something for $200 unplanned. It's not there. So I do know that for myself, I had to essentially stop, not stop looking at my bank account, but stop looking at it to tell me what I could do. And so the only way I was able to do that was by having a budget that felt manageable, that felt realistic, and that was on my phone. So that's another big thing, is that if I make budgeting be a separate activity from all the other activities I'm already doing in my life, I'm just not going to do it. If somebody's like, you know, sit down for 30 minutes and just look through all your transactions and enter everything into a spreadsheet and all that, that has a zero dopamine rating score, right?
Yeah.
And so that is just like not, and I like spreadsheets, but that is still just like, that has no upside to me. So what I have found is that if it's on my phone and I can play into the fact that I love to multitask, then it became something that I started to do more regularly of like that, you know, you are in the car and you get home and instead of going inside, you're just jumping around on a million different apps on your phone while you're sitting in the garage. I have learned that Google Sheets can be one of those and that I can look at where am I at in the numbers instead of using the checking account balance as the thing that could tell me what to do. So now, obviously, that does require having a budget that is accurate that we can rely on. But I do know that putting in the work to establish that in a way that fit into my life and fit into the fact that I didn't want budgeting to be this big to do did allow me to see the big discrepancy between what I falsely believed was available based on looking at my checking account versus what the budget could actually tell me. And I think over time, that enjoyment or that brain tingle almost of like knowing where I'm at, of like, I can't visualize where I'm at in the pay period and how much is left, but my budget can tell me that. I think I started to enjoy the relief of not having the stress of where am I at? Am I over budget? Am I spending on a credit card? Am I doing that? So it that takes that experience, you know, like we have to experience it one or two times in order for our brain to start to rewire and be like, oh, that is pleasant. That is enjoyable.
Having those couple of successful periods where you have actually managed to stay on track and look at your account balance and go, hey, I'm not at $8 this at the end of this period. And my check's coming in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That's new. I didn't zero out the account this month.
Yeah. Like you just said, is so important is instead of trying to say, I'm going into this budgeting thing and I have to do it this way for the rest of my life. Again, zero dopamine rating score. But if I say I'm going to do this for just one pay period, and that's even a concept in the book Atomic Habits, is to be counterintuitive to your own brain and actually tell your brain that you can't do it any longer than this. So like an example he gives is if you're struggling to go to the gym and you want to work out, if you tell yourself, I'm going to go to the gym and I have to leave after 5 minutes. Once I get there, I have to leave after 5 minutes. If we do that a couple of times, our brain is like, I don't want to leave after 5 minutes. Like, this is annoying. And so then we start to want to be there longer. And so I think for like budgeting, like if we say, I'm going to do this for one pay period, and then at the end of that pay period, I can go back to whatever other budget method I want. I'm only going to do this for one pay period. If we really zoom that time down, that our commitment is very short, and I'm a big proponent of building rewards into the system. So I would even say, I'm only going to do this for one pay period, and then I'm going to stop. And at the end of that pay period, I'm going to buy this thing, or I'm going to, you know, this, whatever's left over is going to be mine. Then when we get to the end of that pay period, our brain might actually experience something during that pay period that says, hey, I don't want to quit after one pay period. And so we then are like, well, maybe I can find some sort of hybrid that works better for me next pay period or whatever. But just getting ourselves to start is such a big deal. And so I think just only committing to a very small amount of time can sometimes be better than from here on out, you know, there's this giant line and for the rest of eternity, I'm going to be budgeting my whole life, whatever. Sometimes we think that way and then we give that as a reason to not do it at all.
And you don't even necessarily think this is how I'm going to be the rest of my life, but seemingly in the back of your head or subconsciously, that is what you end up thinking, and that does end up being its own barrier. And that's with anything that you're trying to do, and maybe that's entirely why it is that New Year's resolutions don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And quitting smoking, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to have another cigarette again. I want to get healthier.
Right.
Okay, wonderful. That's a great goal. But then what are you going to do about those tacos?
That is the big question. And I think building rewards into it, too, is another thing. I also don't function very well having to have the reward after I do the unpleasant task. So I actually have the reward during the unpleasant task is what something that's another like one of those quirky things that I've always done that now I understand why of like if I'm, you know, if I have to clean the basement and I don't like to do that, I'll eat the treat or drink the pleasant drink while I'm cleaning the basement. And most people will say, oh, in order to motivate myself, I'm going to say, once I'm done, I'll go get that gas station pop. Well, that doesn't work for me. Like, I'm not going to do it. I'll just go get the gas station pop and not clean the basement. When I started doing the rewards during the unpleasant task, then that started to be so helpful. So something I do during the pay period is if I have a category that I set an amount for and I come under budget. So groceries is the one that happens the most for me with this, is I struggle to stay on budget with groceries. But every time I tell myself, if you have $200 in groceries for this week, if you spend $185, then that $15 belongs to you for going out to lunch or a couple extra iced coffees or whatever. I am magically able to stay at $185 in the grocery store if I know as soon as I leave the grocery store, I get to go spend that $15 and it belongs to me as personal spending cash. And then in the total, I stayed on budget. And that's I've talked about that before. Some people who are very type A budgeters are like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, well, I'm not a type A budgeter.
So that sounds a lot like man math when it comes to tools. You've gone out, you spend $200 on a tool, and then you use that tool to do a bunch of maintenance tasks around your house that normally you would contract out. Mm-hmm. And let's say that contracting it out would normally cost $150 an hour for the contractor. And after you've done that like 15 times, well, now you've actually made $1,500.
Yes.
So you've actually earned $1,500 right. by buying this $200 tool.
Right. You're like, honey, my side income is purchasing tools.
I mean, you can learn more on TikTok. Just look up man math. Actually, don't look up man math. I'm sure it will make your brain melt because we are not bright creatures.
But what you're saying is so true, though, of like, if we can figure out those ways to make it be like, oh, the thing that I thought was going to be terrible is actually going to give me an immediate reward, an immediate payoff of some kind, then we can start to do it. So eating out is a perfect example of eating out compared to eating at home. Instead of just saying, I have to eat at home because it's the right thing to do, that's not going to fly. That's not going to be like, oh, yeah, now suddenly I no longer desire takeout at all because eating at home is the right thing to do. But if we can instead turn it into something that gives us a more frequent and more tangible reward of not just, I'm not going to eat at home only because it's simply the right thing to do, but I'm going to set up something where we get to buy this thing or we get to do this thing and the door is open to that because of eating at home, then we can start to rewire those pathways so that our brain sees eating at home as the thing that allows us to do the other fun thing, for example. And so I really recommend not trying to, I usually say it in a broader sense on Instagram, I just say, spending less for the sake of spending less is a terrible goal, right? And so saying that like, oh, well, spending as little as possible is what I'm trying to do. There are some people who are motivated by that. I am absolutely not one of them. But spending less on something that we just value less so that we can spend more on something that we value more, hinging those two things together can start to create the motivation that maybe wasn't as much there before.
So my wife and I actually put a 3x5 card up on our microwave above our stove saying with I'm pretty sure it's a quote more than likely from you regarding basically eating at home rather than going out allows us to pay down our debts so that we can in the future spend more on ourselves and things that we want to do.
Love it. It sounds like something that I would say, but also sounds like something a lot of other people would say.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template.
So my wife only follows a few budgeting gurus. One of them has a program that focuses more on a 70-20-10 budget split and utilizing 7 different accounts for breaking up your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we've tried utilizing their techniques. Unfortunately, I don't think it really worked. I mean, breaking up the accounts has actually been helpful for us. Mm-hmm. So we have stuck with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, I think we've kind of not been able to really stick with, because like some of the advice, it just didn't resonate with us. And then she actually found your stuff regarding the pay period budgeting. And it seemed to expand more on how we were already trying to do things,
mm-hmm.
with saying, okay, we've got this much coming in. Mm-hmm. What all is due between now and our next paycheck? And
yeah.
then after we've paid that, what do we have left for taking care of everything else?
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we've kind of shoehorned the two together and
yeah.
saying, okay, well, we need to set aside this much money for our groceries. We need to set aside this much for taking care of these particular bills. And now let's budget out the rest of the other things, because we need to do that. And now what do we have left?
And what I also like about not just budgeting by pay period, but setting up multiple pay periods at a time so that I can have a way to visualize like the next 6 pay periods, which for us and for you guys too is the next 3 months. That really alleviated the time blindness piece for me of having like something physical that's in front of me that's showing me how it's going to play out across time. Because again, I just could not visualize like, oh, if I do this in January and February and March, then I'll be able to hit that savings goal or whatever it is. Like that was just a really hard thing for me to piece together. And so seeing it as I only have to track one small pay period at a time, but in the same spot that I'm only tracking one pay period at a time, I can actually look at 6 pay periods at a time, gave me the chance to, I say that it's like a blend of a budget and a calendar. It's a schedule for my money of when these things come in and then these things go out and then the next paycheck comes in. That really allowed me to conceptualize it better. This is going to be the way that my money flows in my bank account, whether I look at it this way or not, like, right? Like whether I write it down this way, pay attention to it this way or track this way, this is going to be the actual influx and exit of my money across time. And so having a way to look at it that way has really helped to be okay with things not happening right away, which that's another hard part about ADHD is that it's either now or not now. Those are the 2 times I have. And so having something that was external to my brain to say, it's not in this pay period, but it is in next pay period, and it's already there and it's written down, has given me a much higher success rate, even if it's not perfect, but a much higher success rate of saying, I'm okay with not buying it right now because I know that next pay period starts in 6 days and that thing that I want to buy right now is budgeted for in 6 days. I can do that. I can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see it as the now or not now binary choices, that those are the only 2 things, is I'm either buying it right now or I'm never buying it, then we buy it right now. And so
yeah.
giving that visual picture of the way that I can make the things that I want to buy possible, even if it's not going to happen right now, has, like I said, not given me a perfect success rate, but increased my chances of being okay with waiting across time, which is that harder piece too. And so I love what you said about like breaking down your accounts too, because I think anything we can do to make the task smaller is a higher likelihood of sticking to it. And so because of what you're doing, breaking it down into groceries goes here and mortgage and loan payments goes here, you're giving yourself a smaller box that you have to stick to that incidentals account, for example, you know? And
well,
so just narrowing it is helpful.
Particularly with the mortgage and those loans, what makes that particularly helpful is that since that's all that comes out of that, once I've got that dollar value there, okay, that's how much it needs to be in that account, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I can skim off the little bit extra that is left into the other account that's at that bank. And then I can just forget that account exists. And in fact, actually right now I haven't even looked at that savings account, which is where all of that sits, or the checking account that's at the same bank now for over a week and a half. You know, I've looked at it previously to make sure that all of the balances are correct and that everything's paid out appropriately, just to make sure that everything is on the up and up. But otherwise, no balance checks to see where everything's at. And it's just one of those, okay, everything's kosher. Who cares where everything's at? Because it's all paid. Who knows what my balances are? Because, well, it's not in the hole. And I don't need it right now. Now, if we come up to a spot where our checking account that we usually spend out of does hit a snag where we're broke, I can go and look at that other checking account and go, okay, do we have what we need to cover that? You know, so it does kind of become an emergency fund. Unfortunately, it's nowhere near where we need it to be, but it is nice to have it there.
I wonder if I, now that I'm listening, I would try a budget that only covers whatever has to happen in the incidentals. Have you tried making a budget by pay period that's only for what comes in and out of that one account, not your big picture overall, not what's covered in your groceries and the mortgage and all that stuff? But like, I would try a budget that is only for what you're trying to track in that incidental account, because it sounds like that's the pain point. That's the problem area that like you've kind of pieced together a more automated system for your other accounts. It's just staying on track with what's happening in the available to spend account, so to say. So I would give that a try if you haven't before, of having a very small budget that has a very short list of categories, and this is all we have to pay attention to.
So for the most part, that's kind of what I do. I do keep track of what's going on in the account that has my mortgage and the loans, just because I do need to know what is going on there. I need to know what's going on there to make sure that everything's covered and everything will be handled. But otherwise, okay, that's there. That's what's handled. We're all good. And then otherwise, just making sure that, you know, the utilities and, you know, gas for the car and so forth, that's where 90% of my focus is at, which is coming out of that main account where my payroll goes.
Yeah, that would be what I would do as well, is to just try to shorten the list of things that you have to pay attention to ahead of time, so that when you sit down to check in on that budget or on that bank account, that it's as small of a task as possible. And like I said, I personally don't make a separate to-do out of budgeting. I do it in the parking lot or when I'm, you know, having a cup of coffee in the morning. I do 99% of it on my phone. Just for example, when I watch TV, I'm usually also doing something on my phone at the same time. And so having a budgeting system that fits as seamlessly into those things that I'm already doing as much as possible gives me more of a chance to look at it. You know, so I'll watch a show and just kind of scan through my budget. And like I said, towards the beginning, trying to put a much bigger emphasis on the budget telling me what I have available than what the checking account has. Because a lot of times now, you know, 10 years into budgeting my pay period, I now know for a fact that there are often times in the pay period where there's a giant discrepancy between my bank account having several thousand. And then if I look at my budget, it says your budget buffer is $125, you know, but at the same, in the same moment, there's a couple thousand in my checking account. And so I've learned that that's the inaccurate one and this is the accurate one. And so it takes time and practice. But if I think, ooh, I should probably check in on my money, I haven't looked at stuff in a while, I'm opening the Google Sheets app to look at my budget, not opening the Chase Bank app to look at my balances, which is what I used to do and what a lot of people do still. Do you have any other questions or things you want to talk or even things you want to share with the people who are listening about your experience with ADHD and money? I don't think we landed on like you're going to walk away from this conversation and all your problems are solved, but hopefully just dialoguing about it with someone who has a similar brain can kind of open some more ideas or possibilities for what you're already doing, because it sounds like you're already doing a very good job.
So for the most part, I do actually feel like I do a great job. Like I said before, the big issue is when I happen to miss schedule, because I do most of the tracking of where everything's at the beginning of the month, and then the items that are due, the utilities that are due towards the end of the month, I don't actually get back to because I got the notification that it was due on, for example, the 26th of the month. I got that notification on the 5th. And I don't see anything about it again until the 5th of the next month. And then when I go and check, it's like, wait a minute, how is that bill $300 and some dollars, $400 and some dollars? oh, it's because I forgot to pay it last month. And now I'm juggling this now a huge bill. And so I have to figure out how I'm going to fit that into the budget. There's no room for it in the budget because I don't have enough to cover that and everything else. So now I have to do a half payment. Well, can I schedule two half payments to be able to fit it into my budget? Of course not, because utilities don't like doing that. They're more than willing to take your money all right now, or all right now and come back later when you're about ready to make your next payment. No, you can't do it 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, or schedule it for that. You have to come back 2 or 3 weeks from now to do it. The only tip that I've got for that would be, you know, if you do sit at a computer often, post-it notes have a potential to be helpful, but don't necessarily rely on them. Maybe try to have a friend or partner or somebody that you can trust touch base with them and maybe see if they'd be willing to provide reminders at certain points. Maybe they're more susceptible to notifications and can work with you, but don't try and dump it on them. If you've taken it on you to do the budget, don't just sit there and go, well, this is too much for me. I keep failing at it. You do it. At most, try and buddy with them. You know, both of you work on it so that both of you are on the same page, and then you're less likely to have things fall through the cracks.
I totally agree. Once someone else expected it of me, I was much better at, you know, if I knew that someone was relying on me to do something, whether it was a school due date, you know, so my teacher was waiting for something, or even if a friend is like, okay, like we're going to do this together and I need this from you, I know that I'm going to be so much more likely to do it than if I'm just internally deciding that it would be a good idea to do this for myself, whatever. And so I am the same way as you, by the way, when you mentioned that I, like a lot of people with ADHD, find success with alarms. I don't at all, because I just dismiss it. Like I can set an alarm and I can say, you know, take the trash out or whatever. I just dismiss it and I don't do it. So I don't find that that guides me well.
It would be really helpful if these digital assistant apps would actually say what it was. You know, the alarm goes off and it says, you need to take out the trash. I really wish that the things that were happening on these TV shows where it says, hey, it's time to take your meds. Okay, I'll take my meds now because it says it's time to take my meds. Instead, what do we have? Did-a-dink, 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 swipe. Well, that doesn't do me any good.
When I first went on to ADHD medicine, my husband put a 9 a.m. alarm on his phone. And then he would say to me, go take your medicine. And I would do it every time. You know, it's just like that worked for me. But if I had a 9 a.m. alarm on my phone, same thing. I would just snooze or off or whatever.
Snooze, stop,
yep,
wipe.
Yep. But him, like hearing his phone go off and then having him look at me and say, hey, go take your meds. It was like, yep, got it. I can do it. No problem. So yeah, I do think that if you have someone, and it doesn't even have to be someone who you're managing money with, it can just be anyone who's willing to support you, mm-hmm, and say, you know, if somebody who does respond very well to alarms could then, like, if someone called me and said, your utility bill is due tomorrow, log in and pay it, I would do it. And so I think that's a really great tip is, first of all, I think that happens a lot with ADHD is a stigma around that means that I'm somehow like super dependent and I'm like, I'm not, you know, I'm not capable or I'm not, it's like a weakness of mine that my husband has to set an alarm instead of me setting an alarm. Why can't you just set an alarm? Why does he have to set an alarm? I think just like completely letting go of that as like, if it's going to help me, it's going to help me. And I don't care where the source of that help comes from. Being able to let go of that then gives us the ability to just look out for whatever support does actually help us.
We have other things that are our strengths. A lot of times they happen to be related to our hyperfocus. We find something that is interesting to us and we're able to hyperfocus on it and we're able to deep dive on it and we're able to dig up information about the thing that nobody can find and are able to do it well. For you, it happened to be the paper-cut budgeting. So you were able to do very well with it. Unfortunately, there's other things that we don't do quite so well with. And a lot of times it's related to time blindness and object permanence. And to anybody who happens to have a friend with ADHD that hasn't responded to you for a while, go knock on their door. They do remember you. They just aren't that great with notifications on their phone.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. They care about, like, and that's a big thing too, is that like me not responding or not reaching out is not at all an indication of how much or how little I care about someone either. It's just, but it can be perceived that way too.
You said something that I didn't feel that there was necessarily something to respond to
right,
it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You said it was raining outside. I mean, it sure is, but sure did I need to respond to that?
I have nothing more to say about that. It's so true. Well, very much enjoy this conversation, Sean, and I am very grateful that you were willing to talk so openly about it because I don't have very many guys on the podcast, so that's already a win of broadening the horizons of the podcast, but then also just being willing to like talk about, like I said, I don't think we problem solved a whole lot like I was hoping to do for you, but I do think people listening will feel a much deeper insight into the way that our brains work. And either they know and love someone who has ADHD and they might have a much better, more compassionate sense of how we're wired and how we're moving through the world, or they either know that they do or suspect that they do and can find ways to copy some of the things that we have said have worked for us in their own lives as well. So I really, really appreciate it.
I will say one other thing is that if tools that are provided just, you know, for anything that you're struggling with, you know, if you look out there and say, hey, this has tripped me up, that's tripped me up, I look for advice on it, and everything that is suggested just doesn't work, it might be time to look into suggestions. For lack of a better term, it's commonly referred to on TikTok as neurospicy or neurodivergent. Look up tips for those, for under those topics, on how to handle what it is that you're struggling with. And it's possible that those suggestions, that's not to be, I'm not trying to diagnose anyone, but the tips could help provide you some comfort and success.
Yep. An Instagram reel is genuinely the reason that I sought out a diagnosis, because it was what an ADHD brain sounds like. And it was like the multiple trains of thought at the same time of you're humming a song and you're verbally going through your task list and you're thinking about something that happened yesterday. And you can hear all three things at the same time as she's moving through her kitchen. And I watched it and I showed it to Kyle and I was like, your brain doesn't sound like this. I literally thought everyone's brain sounded like that, of like five different trains of thought simultaneously. And he was like, no, not at all. And that was literally the first like door open of like, I think I might be wired differently. So I completely agree that like, agree with what you said too, of it's not going to diagnose you. You can't watch an Instagram reel and then go around and tell everybody you have ADHD, but it can help you realize the things that you assumed everyone thought might be different, and can at least give you the little push or nudge to go seek out that professional help.
And it is perfectly okay to seek out that help.
Totally agree. It was such a relief. More than anything else, it was a weight off my shoulders when it was like, this is why I have struggled with those things.
Sometimes just knowing is all it takes.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, again, thanks, Sean.
This is Kyle here with Carly for another segment of Fortune Cookie Finance, where we explore all the possibilities of what the future could hold for finances. And today, I am a magic genie, and I can grant you three wishes as long as they relate to the American school system. And I want you to make three wishes of what you would change about personal finance education for American middle school and high school students.
I was thinking it was going to be broad strokes like public education policy. And I was like, where is this going?
If you didn't know, I usually come up with these topics about 6 seconds before you hit record.
And I genuinely have absolutely no hint at what it's going to be until he's talking.
Just freewheeling.
Okay. Three things about financial education.
Yeah. Because I think we can agree that across the board,
it's lacking.
That is for sure. What are your three wishes when it comes to personal finance education?
Like K-12?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it would be very beneficial to start from the beginning, from when kids are young, and talk like in math. For those listening, I do have experience teaching and being in elementary education and all that. So curriculum gives a ton of time to
counting money, to identifying coins, to, you know, like our first grader has spent a lot of time learning how to count groups of coins and make change and all that kind of stuff. It's done in isolation without a broader topic at all of like what it means to buy things, to save, just very basic concepts of what does it mean to have a savings account and why would you put money into a savings account? Things that a 6-7-year-old is more than capable of understanding. The piggy bank idea of why would you put money in there as opposed to immediately going to the store and buying it? Where does that money come from? I know we've had conversations with our kids before about, like, I think because they see us swipe a card more than they see us pay physical cash for something, they think that you literally just swipe the card and then you walk out of the store with whatever that you wanted.
That same first grader just a couple days ago asked, how much money is on a credit card?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he wants to get a credit card for his birthday.
He asked if he could get a credit card for his birthday because he thought money just comes on it. And I was like, I was literally made for this.
There is no money on a credit card.
You have,
probably got like 5 feet taller.
Yeah, you have debt-free mom as your mother. So I would definitely start there of having a comprehensive K-12 education that gets progressively more complex that starts with the basic building blocks of the things that they are going to have to deal with, whether they're educated on it or not. And so that's why it's so frustrating that it is almost entirely absent from basic education, because it's something that it doesn't matter what career they go into after they're done with school, what if they get, you know, higher education or if they start working right away, if they rent or if they own, if they get married, if they're single, they have to deal with managing money. And so that is generally the level at which we would say, well, if that is how important it is to someone's success in life, then we're going to put that into our curriculum. That's generally how we build or how we triage the things that we're going to teach. So why it's absent is beyond me. Because you could become the best doctor in the whole world, and if you don't know how to manage your money, you're going to have a pretty difficult life.
All this is very good, but we're trying to keep three wishes.
Okay.
So if your first wish
I thought that part of it was that I had to convince the genie that this is a valid wish.
No.
Okay.
I trust you implicitly.
All right. So wish number one is a comprehensive K-12 education that is like neutral in tone about like it shouldn't be about what you should and shouldn't do. It should just be what is a savings account? What is a credit card? What is an interest rate?
So at the same time that you're teaching coins and bills, mm-hmm. you're also teaching those really essential mm-hmm. basic financial mechanisms of checking yep. account, saving.
It's
account,
like Michael Scott card. Talking about a lemonade stand with Oscar. Like that kind of conversation should happen in
Explain
school.
Explain it to me like I'm five.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's which one is
yes.
really basic financial mechanisms are included in the curriculum.
Yeah, to the point that kids don't even like remember a point at which they were suddenly being taught about money in isolation, that it was just woven throughout.
Okay, wish two.
Okay, wish two is in high school having a required class, preferably more than one, about the more technical side then of personal finance. So budgeting, taxes, insurance, the things that are absolutely fundamental to understand in order to be a successful adult, regardless of what you do, and having that be required education in high school so that when they get a job at McDonald's, they understand why there are tax withholdings. They understand that McDonald's offers full-time employees 401k contributions. If they understand how life-changing it would be to opt into that at 18 years old. So it would be specific high school, not just that broad, you know, what's a savings account, but like here is how to graduate from high school and manage your money.
As somebody who used to work at a summer camp, we employed about 100 high school and college students each summer. Many of them, it was their very first job ever. And it was just kind of a heartbreaking conversation every year that there was probably 20 or 30, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, never had a job before, never had a paycheck before, who would, after their first week, have come to me like, I didn't get my full paycheck. I was like, you did. You had taxes taken out of it. That will happen for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I think it would be nice to, at the same time that teenagers are typically getting their first jobs and going out into the job market for the first time, to also pair that with a class that prepares them to know what to expect, to look at their pay stub and understand it, to know what kind of tax forms to expect when you have employment, and to set them up for success as they are beginning to start their very early career preparation.
Yeah, because I really think high school, especially when they are sometimes months away from becoming a full-time employee somewhere, it is the opportunity for some cycle breaking with things that they might have grown up with, where they might be in a home that is never going to teach them the dangers of a credit card, or that is never going to teach them to opt into that 401k, like we said, and that learning that at 18, even if so, something that happens in high school is you get told something and so you want to do the opposite because you don't want any authority to tell you what to do. I'm fine with that. Like, that's a normal part of development. But what we can still do is plant the seed, and then they rebel against it for a couple of years. And then they get to 24, 25, and they're like, I had that high school teacher that told me that this, you know, maybe it's not until they graduate from college that they're ever asked, oh, do you want to opt into the retirement benefits? And they're like, oh, yeah, no, I remember that. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay if it's years away from when they hear about it to when they actually implement it. I personally think, so here's my wish three.
Oh, okay.
My wish three is that math teachers who understand how compound interest works when charged and when earned would more, because you have to learn, you learn compounding and exponential growth and all that kind of stuff in multiple math classes in high school. I wish that it was put into real world terms to show students that at 18, if they invested $20 a month and started when they were 18, that would provide the bulk of their retirement. And that sounds too good to be true, but that's exactly, like, that should be the title of a lesson about compound growth. And so I think having, you know, you need that personal finance in isolation that's like that, and that could touch on that a little bit. But I think if I was a high school math teacher, I would first teach the exponential growth concept, the basic formulas that you need to know. And then once I felt like they understood it, I would say, you know how these, you know, the graph suddenly swings up and it just looks like, oh, it's just like jumping into the sky. This is what happens to your money when it sits in an investment for long enough. So I'm, you know, if I was their teacher, I'm 32. I'm further down the graph than you are, which means my swing up is not going to be as dramatic because I wasn't in it as long. Mm-hmm. But you are all the way back here at the beginning. And if you start now, you don't have to try to make it up later. You only have to put this small amount. And the fact that you stay in the game means that you get that big upswing at the top.
I know last year you did a call-in with a high school class for just like 30 minutes and basics of personal finance. But I do remember you sharing that story of one of the students was very interested in what you just explained and was asking specific questions like, well, if I put away $40 a month, what would that, if I put it at $50?
We opened a calculator. I shared my screen. I talked to this high school class. I shared my screen and he had a note, but I know that he did it. I know that he went home and did it because
he's going to be a billionaire.
He will. And I want to cut. I want to share. but I showed the graph and I showed, you know, because you're only 18, 19, if you do, like I said, $25 a month, all of these years, all the way up to when you're 65, it's over $1 million. And he was like, well, that's 25 a month. What if it was 40 a month, like you said, which is $15 more a month? And so we plugged that into the calculator and you could just collectively see the light bulbs going off for them of like, what I don't have in money, I can make up for with time. Mm-hmm. And so that's my third wish, is that because we're already teaching those concepts in math, that we would give such a strong tie to not just the theory of investing, but how it would change their life. Because I wish that I understood that when I was a teen. I worked a very well-paying job in high school, and I invested absolutely none of it. And my financial situation would look completely different if I had done the $25, $30 a month when I was 17.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I am very sorry to mislead you, but I am not a genie. I cannot grant those wishes.
Darn.
Darn it. But, you know, we'll keep working at it and maybe they will come true.
See you next week. Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.